And I lived there for a few years and I thought to myself, I should probably change. I've been here 3 years. I should go to another apartment. But no, you don't have to necessarily change. Sometimes what's right in front of you is best, because I ended up, I did the calculation. If I had stayed there, I would have saved like thousands or tens of thousands of dollars on what I ended up spending on increased rent at every place. So sometimes trying to make the best of what's right in front of you can be a challenge. It's always a trade-off.
Welcome to the Leaders of Tomorrow podcast. My name is Chris Thompson, your host of the show and the head coach of the Student Works Management Program. This is a show dedicated to young and ambitious entrepreneurs and ultimately the leaders of tomorrow. Each week, we will bring you an inspiring interview or message to help you create the future you know you deserve. Let's get started.
Hey, leaders, really excited to be bringing on our guest for today. Jonathan Feist is an operator who worked with us just over a decade ago, so a 32-year-old, and really has accomplished a whole bunch since leaving StudentWorks. He's had a very, very strong sales career, and he talks about the impact of choosing just an industry that you think is going to stay the same, and something that you really see as a growth opportunity. And so he's chosen sort of cybersecurity. He's working with one of the best companies in the world in that space, and it's taken him a while to get there. Obviously, 32, one of the youngest people is at our organizations there. But anyhow, it takes a while to get to that type of an organization. He talked about the types of things that he needed to do. And then one of the other cool things is during COVID, he invested in a restaurant with a really great friend, and they have been recognized. The restaurant was named the number one restaurant in Montreal by Cult Montreal and ranked number 30 for Canada's top 100 restaurants in 2023 as well. So we talked about that and what it's like about building out a restaurant and working as a team. And he's an investor in that, not actually the restaurateur. I think you're going to love this podcast. And again, why are we doing this? To attract other young, amazing people like Jonathan to our program so they can learn to be incredible leaders and have fantastic careers. So if you know any amazing young leaders, please share them with me. You can send me an email at cthompson@studentworks.com. You can go to studentworks.com and have them apply, or you could share this podcast with them. We start recruiting again in July of 2024. The 2025 season, our recruiting season, is very short, just a number of months before off again. So thanks so much. Have a super fantastic day. Jonathan, welcome to the Leaders of Tomorrow podcast.
Thank you very much, Chris, for having me.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited. And, it's been a while, so it's always fun to catch up. So I know we've been, emailing, and I've been seeing your progress over LinkedIn. But why don't we start before StudentWorks, John? Who was Jonathan before StudentWorks?
Yeah, sure. I grew up in Montreal, born and raised. Had a great family upbringing, but I think at a very, very young age, I recognized that if I was to make something of myself in this world, it would have to come from within. And so that's kind of, I'd say I had that entrepreneurial itch from a very young age. But yeah, I love playing sports, love getting out there, having a good time, always kind of staying sharp with regard to just having good communication skills and cracking jokes with people and trying to have a good time. So that eventually bled into sales. And yeah.
No, for sure. For sure. And why don't you describe your experience at StudentWorks?
Sure. And it's funny because even thinking back, you're asking me about before that. I mean, I was 18 at the time. It was pretty young. So thinking now, so I'm 32 now, and thinking who I was before 18, even that is a bit challenging. But StudentWorks, I mean, I remember the first call that I had about it, and I was it was kind of presented as a management program, which I thought was very cool. Then I had my doubts, and I went to an informational meeting, and once I decided that I wanted to do it, that was it, right? Never look back type of thing. And so I had a great time there at StudentWorks. It was an opportunity to sharpen my sales skills, to prove myself to myself and to others, to make money, which as salespeople, we should never shy away from admitting. And it was a launching pad. It was a way to separate. I thought it would be a way to separate myself and to give myself an edge. And it was.
Exactly. I see the same thing. And certainly, yeah, like there should not be concern about someone saying, hey, I want to do well in life, right? Like, you know, the reality is that as Canadians, we want people who want to go work hard and do well because they actually carry a big, you know, net plus for the economy. They employ people, they go out and pay higher taxes, they're contributors. So this is something that is absolutely a good thing. So what do you still use from your time at StudentWorks?
Oof, good question. I mean, it's crazy to think. So I still, in my last interview to get the job that I am today, I still mentioned the fact that, hey, when I was 18 years old, I was knocking on doors, going door to door sales. And it's sort of the foundation for any salesperson. It's almost a rite of passage. And so that certainly required a fearlessness and a persistence that never goes away, nor should it ever go away. And I don't expect me to ever change. You sort of need those skills to build on. That's kind of the foundation. So that's something that I definitely still use today because, you know, we could call it prospecting or a million different cold calling or whatever it is. As salespeople, we always have to be adding value. And sometimes that could be with people that we don't know yet. So these are the foundational skills that salespeople need. Also, I still remember, you know, when I was building my quotes and I would go in and present the quotes and proposals to homeowners, thinking how high stakes these meetings were going to be. So being a little nervous, thinking to myself, my God, I have to go in, present my proposal and basically close this thing out and sell it. And that too is also a foundational part of sales, something that I still do almost on a daily basis, where I was talking to a friend the other day and I said, I'll call you after. I got a really high stakes meeting that I'm about to go into. And the thing is, the stakes just keep getting higher. That what stays the same is you putting yourself in a position to go into high stakes meetings. And so if you're always going into positions where the stakes are high, that's probably a good sign. And I think it's a good thing. It's the right trajectory. And it's like getting butterflies in your stomach before a date. I mean, those are the types of people that you want to be going on dates with, right? If you're not getting butterflies or if you're not thinking that you're in a high stakes environment, you might not be pushing yourself enough.
Yeah, no, you are so right. And again, I know we commonly share, like, if, by the way, Jonathan, we could deliver fantastic leads to all of our first year operators, you know, at a really, really low cost, we would still want them out canvassing and learning how to, again, you know, just interact with people. That's something that you and I both, because of that early skill set, we can do it anywhere, right? No problem. Have a conversation, you know, quote unquote, the elevator pitch. You've got that. And then again, it's like at these other high stakes meetings, it's like thinking on your feet. You know, what are we going to say? I don't know what I'm going to say. When they ask me a question, I'll know what to say. And it's all this interaction that you have. You left StudentWorks. And then, so why don't you describe, you know, your trajectory and why you took the jobs you took?
Yeah, totally. I mean, just before that, I will say that there is no substitute to good preparation too. It is important to ideally have done your research and stuff, but eventually, yeah, you just got to kind of go for it. And that never goes away. That's something I'm quite certain of.
And that's fair. You're right, Ashley. The truth is, I don't know exactly what they're going to say because they're going to have a different question. I don't know what their question will be, but the best sales reps and the best people are scripted. You know, reach in my bag and I've got this one because I've used it 100 times before and it's effective and it meets their needs here. So correct. Yeah, we've done the work. Yes.
Yeah, totally. In terms of what I did after, I went to university. Like I said, 18, I was a young and innocent, I guess. I actually traveled for quite a few months. And then I went to university. I did my degree there in political science and economics. After university, I traveled again to South America. I spent about 4 months there backpacking, learned Spanish pretty much, at least got the foundations, and then came back and did a little bit of soul searching, which is also a good thing. And I worked in restaurants, actually starting at the bottom as a busboy and working in events and catering. It's funny to see now because, as maybe we'll speak about, I'm a partner in a few restaurants. So, you know, you start just like in sales, you start knocking at doors, or in restaurants, you start as a busboy and eventually can become an owner with the right, you know, path and decisions. But then I started my more corporate journey. So I worked for a startup for a bit as a sales role. Because it was a startup, I felt I don't have anything to sell. In startups, you tend to sell kind of the dream, things that are half-baked products, because you can navigate, you sort of build the products that people will give you money for. So it's a bit of a chicken and the egg thing. And that's great and that's fun. And that is for a certain type of person. And I can appreciate that. But I wanted to get more into real sales. So I ended up working for an X-ray security manufacturer for 4 years and selling to all over the States. And that was really kind of a launching pad for me.
And that was VOTI, V-O-T-I.
VOTI.
What were they like? What was their training program like? What was the mentorship like?
So spoiler alert, they're now bankrupt.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it was, it had the potential to be an exceptional company, and we did pretty amazing things. For example, you know, working for some supplying x-rays to huge corporations, across America and state governments, et cetera, we had even done the security for the Super Bowl, because we had been doing security for all kinds of sports stadiums. So X-ray security scanners, just like you would see at the airport, they're also used in non-conventional places like courthouses and sports stadiums and cruise lines and you name it. I mean, you can find them in a lot of places. But yeah, along the way, you always meet people that you connect with. You meet others that you don't. You have managers that can guide and support you. You have managers that you might think you're smarter than. And you need to keep your ego in check in those cases.
And you might actually be smarter than, like, that also may be true. So, you know,
it might be, but sometimes you think you're smarter, but in what ways? And do you have the people skills to manage? Maybe not. That was good. So, yeah, but I have some lifelong friends from that part of me, and I learned some great lessons. Yeah.
Yeah, no, and that's really what's key. And that was a positive experience. And then where did you go next, and how did that go?
Yeah, and then when I felt that I wasn't learning as much as I wanted to, that I was plateauing, I determined, and this is where I kind of doubled down on this, or I thought to myself, what do I think is not going to change in the future? Jeff Bezos has said things like this too, And for me, I thought to myself that cybersecurity was not something that would be going anywhere. Cloud computing was not going anywhere. AI was not going anywhere. FinTech, I was really into Bitcoin at the time, but general FinTech and the advancements in payment processing, I figured that wasn't going anywhere. And not only not going anywhere, but would be increasing in the future. So I knew that I had to, that I wanted to work for one of those places. X-ray is in security, but I figured that cybersecurity was a good kind of next step. And so I went to, and I also thought that software would be, that I wanted to sell software versus physical machinery and manufacturing. So I went into a cybersecurity company called Okta. And from there, I went on to Palo Alto Networks, where I am now.
And so, yeah, that's always a great way to think about it is, you know, what opportunity is going to grow? Like when an area is growing, when there's growth, it's just a way better opportunity. They're trying to hire the best sales reps. They're offering the best comps. You know, the growth is the best. And then all of a sudden, when things start to maximize and the growth is out, the bean counters come in and they're starting to cut the comp plans. You know, and understandably, because it starts to be companies are just taking each other's business back and forth. And there's just not as much money in that. So you know, that's a really, really great thing. So how, you know, is that something that you saw was important?
Yeah, totally. And one question too that I don't have the answer to, maybe you do, but at what point do you pivot? Do you shift to another business in the same industry versus what point do you change industry? I'm inclined to think that, and this is what I'm seeing in my current industry, that a lot of the people that who are in really high positions have been in cybersecurity for like 20 years. So you know, I'm saying I'm one of the youngest on my team, even though I feel old sometimes at 32. And so I think it's worth staying in an industry if you can identify something that you like early. Now, that's not always possible. By the same token, it's also okay to try new things and change. But I think you would have an advantage if you stayed in the same kind of in the same sphere.
I believe you totally do. And it's something that I've seen again and again with our alumni, with friends. It's like, who's at the top in the industry? You know, who are the more senior people? People stayed there, excelled, gone up. They know more people. Oh, there's this. Oh, let's move over here. You know, and you know, it's this group of people that largely control and learn and work beyond. And that's one of the other pieces is get along with people, because good chance that person who maybe was your boss later on, you're working for them, or, you know, like it switches and can flip. It's very, very smart to think about it like that. I think that's something I've seen again and again.
Yeah, the contacts aspect is huge. And that also applies geographically. When I was working at Vodi, everything was in the States. When I came back to Quebec, I had to rebuild a network, and that's I'm still rebuilding it. But staying in one place and building those contacts is huge. It serves a lot of benefit. Actually, relating that to student works, you know, I think I could have done it longer, and I would have benefited much more from doing it longer. I think that it wouldn't have been a linear growth had I done it for a second, third, and fourth year. It would have been a much faster growth, in part because of the contacts you make. You do a good job for someone, they call you back the next year, they refer you to a friend, and that just grows and grows and grows. So one of the, you know, speaking on this point of pivoting too quickly, I mean, I was young and I wanted to do new things, and that's okay, but there's a case to be made for staying the course.
Well, we've done a much better job at the time, John. We used to have about a 30 to 35% return rate. Now we have over 50% return rate, and people are just seeing, again, more and more success, more and more learning, more and more growth. Coaches stay longer. The program's so much more robust. So and one of the biggest things that we started doing, John, is right from the first training, we're selling future years. So it's like here, right? And then they're seeing all these veterans. And when half the rooms, or not half, but there's an enormous group of veterans, people are saying, oh, wow, I want to be like them. And I see them putting huge numbers on the board. You know, the vet room, you know, of the top 20 operators, 17 of the top 20 will be vets. You know, so people are going, oh, wow, that I can go get up there. That would be super cool. So, and again, as you mentioned as well, it's like you're developing this business in cybersecurity. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, hey, if someone's knocking on your door, you're walking away. And again, you're not walking away with the clients, but no one can take the relationships away from you, right? And so it's just you're developing relationships that are really going to matter for a long time, you know? And again, it's even when clients leave from one company to go to another, all of a sudden, boom, I'm following John or David or you know, Samantha over there. And then we've got an opportunity to sell in there.
Yeah, for sure. Networking is really important. There's no other way to say it than that.
Exactly. And so Palo Alto Networks, that's a very, very big brand. How did you get in there, and what's it like working with that, you know, I know, really superstar organization?
I knew that, as I mentioned, I knew I wanted to work in cybersecurity. I was working for a cybersecurity company, but only kind of one small part of cybersecurity, which was identity. I knew I wanted to play for the big boys. And the Palo Alto Networks certainly is that. What's interesting is that even though most of my experience was at Voti, I did have to work for a software company just to be invited to even interview at Palo Alto. And I think that that's interesting because sometimes in life, and it's even whether people are going to buy your product, they need to see that they need that validation that you're like that you have, that you're capable of operating at a high level. And they kind of assume that the person before vetted you properly. So it takes some risk off them. I think that's an interesting dynamic. But after that, I mean, look, Palo Alto is just, I'm surrounded by really brilliant people day in and day out. I work very closely with a sales engineer and he's just super knowledgeable. And so for me, it was a really good fit because I wanted to challenge myself. I wanted to improve my knowledge of cybersecurity. I had some knowledge. I certainly did not have enough. I still don't have enough. It's my biggest like imposter syndrome. Don't tell my boss that I feel that I really need to improve my knowledge here. And I thought that this was the place to do it. And it is. And I mean, yeah, the company is doing phenomenally well. And I feel great to be part of a world-class organization.
No, and I think, by the way, imposter syndrome is very common, you know, like it's very, very common, especially with younger people. It makes sense and it's natural where, oh, gee, can I really do this, et cetera. And obviously, you know, having really great people helps you feel more comfortable and they know that. Right. And you know, one of the things about great organizations like that is they've got other people helping make the sale. So it's team sales, you know.
Yeah, big time.
Yes, you know, and you, we've got, you know, account managers, then we got sales engineers, and then, well, you know, the VP is calling the CTO and, you know, et cetera. So there's all this team structures that are making it happen.
Totally. It's an interesting dynamic. Yeah. And it's totally different from a startup environment. So it depends on you too, of what you like, because the flip side to that is there's all these different levels of management and everyone needs to feel that they're justifying their existence and they have KPIs and they want to make sure that they hit their KPIs. So sometimes you have to, there's just so many moving parts and you need to involve a lot of people versus a startup is kind of straight to the point. It's just an interesting way to do business.
Hey leaders, I hope you are enjoying this podcast. As we approach and surpass 300 episodes, well over 95% of the leaders that we have interviewed have been alumni of the StudentWorks Management Program. It has been an honor to participate in their development over the years. Starting now, and only for the fall months, we will be on campus at universities and colleges in Ontario, Quebec, and the East Coast, interviewing students who think they have what it takes to start their first business and get started down the path of entrepreneurship. If you are interested in being a leader in our program or know someone who does, please go to the show notes and hit StudentWorks and get sent to a landing page to apply. There is a bold StudentWorks that you can hit to go to a landing page to apply. Thanks so much. Back to the show. For sure. For sure. So why don't we jump out over to your other two businesses? So you're the founding partner of two Montreal restaurants. I'm not very good at French, so I will blast it. But one of them has been named the number one restaurant in Montreal in 2023. And the other one was ranked number 30 for Canada's top 100 restaurants in 2023. So please tell us how did that happen? And, you know, walk us through.
Sure. Just to make a small correction, and maybe it's me that said that sent that incorrectly, but it was the same restaurant that was ranked first in Montreal and then 30th best in Canada. The other one, has just opened a few months ago. So give us some time and
before we start winning awards.
Okay, cool. So thank you. And so please say the names to the restaurants. I'm an embarrassed Anglo here.
That's okay. So, yeah.
But we talked earlier. I just for our listeners, Montreal is the heart and the center and the foundation of great restaurants in Canada. So we were talking about the FLQ coming and scaring a whole bunch of Montrealers that created the Toronto restaurant scene. But Montreal, fantastic restaurants. Helen and I love to go to Montreal and go to fantastic restaurants. So it's still just amazing. Yes.
We'll have to eat together at Salle Climatisé when we're there. So yeah, Salle Climatisé on Saint Laurent and La Marelle on Beauvien, which is right around the corner. And how that started, it was during COVID. I don't want to say bored, but I was, kind of plateaued with the corporate life, and I wanted to do something different. And I reached out to someone that I had known for a long time, who's someone that I trusted. He's the guy who is running these two restaurants. To be clear, I'm an equity partner, so I'm not an operational partner of the restaurant. But I said, I was like, Brendan, let's start a wine importation business, or I want to do something like this or something like that. And he's like, John, I love you. You don't know anything about wine. There's so many people who do. Please don't embarrass yourself. But, and this is in the heart of COVID, he says, but I've got an idea. I want to open a restaurant, and I want it to be the best restaurant in Montreal. And I said, okay, sure. Restaurants are closed. It was COVID. There was nothing happening. And we did some back of the napkin math, and he kind of made his pitch, and I went home and I thought about it, and I made calculations, and I decided to take a risk on it and invest in this place. And 3 years later, it won some, or even less, two and a half. I mean, it's just a cool spot. These ranking system, the rankings, it's not a perfect science, but hey, we'll take it. I think it's someone that the founding partner is someone that I grew up with and that trusted me, and we continue to work very closely together. It's a good example of when friends can work together as business partners. I think based on trust and back to, building a strong network and having integrity and building, relationships and being authentic and being present for people when they need you. These are the sorts of things that people come to rely on, and this adds value as an investor and as a business person.
I'm sure you know David Chang, chef and founder of Momofuku. So David Chang says that a lot of people, start restaurants, and he says, well, instead of that, why don't you all come over for dinner, put a bunch of money on the table, and light it on fire? That's what David Chang says. And I love that. So not that I know David Chang, heard that on a podcast, of course.
And it's a tough business.
It's just such a tough business. And so how did this work? Why did this work? Why did you invest a whole bunch of money to make this work, Jonathan? With your partner, obviously. So.
Yeah, it's a great question. It is a really tough business. And I think that, sometimes you gotta take bets. And ideally asymmetric bets. And I didn't really know how to run restaurants. And to be clear, I don't. I do know how to read a P&L, and I do have a good business sense, and I do understand what it means to increase top line revenue and keep your costs low. Some very simple business principles, and that's kind of the value that I bring to being a partner. I understand how to, get credit for things and convince people that they should invest in us. And I understand when I'm playing with winners. And so my business partner there is just an exceptional human being, amazing communicator, amazing host. When you go there, you feel like you're eating at your parents' dinner table. And he knows restaurants very, very well. And so that's what makes a good match, is partnering with people that have skills that you don't have. And so that's how I thought it could be. It was a risk, and it's continues to be a risk, because as you alluded to, I mean, the margins in restaurants are very slim. You make a few bad calls and you're not making too much cash. So something to keep an eye on, but it's also good to keep your, it kept my entrepreneurial spirit alive, as, and I knew that it would, as I continued on a more traditional kind of corporate sales path.
Yeah, no. And you know, just for people who don't know, Saint-Laurent is the kind of one of the key restaurant areas. So when you mention it, it's like, yes, we go there often. You know, when we're in Montreal, it's kind of a happening spot. So is his expertise front or back of the shop? And who did you recruit for the back of the shop? Like, what, why did you think you could put together a great package for customers?
Yeah. So he's front of house, and then there were also two chefs who were phenomenal doing back of house. As time goes on, people change their course. So some people come, some people go, there's staffing changes, there's branding changes, right? And that's what I love about it, is that businesses can be an evolution. They don't have to be today what they were 3 years ago. And so there was a good team involved, and it didn't feel like a huge risk, to be honest. And it's just, again, having an edge, like just to be able to look at this conversation. We're talking about this when it's really a small part of like my, let's call it my sales world. Like most of my time is focused on selling cybersecurity, but it's such an interesting thing. And a lot of people, it certainly draws a lot of people into conversation. And it's something that I had even mentioned at a job interview, where it's like, hey, I just want you to know that I also have this thing on the side that I do that won't distract from my main role. And the person interviewing, who would become my boss, was like, no way, that's amazing. I've always wanted to be involved in restaurants. I love to go out for food. I mean, it's just interest. It kind of gives me a seat at the cool kids table.
you always had a seat there, fun. John. Come on.
Thank you, Chris. But yeah, sometimes the value isn't necessarily in the money that you make. That's what I'm saying, is there can be more to it. It's just fun to go with friends and be a part of something special. So
awesome. Well, that's really neat. And obviously you can tell, I really think it's neat. So what, you know, we've been talking about a lot of big wins. You know, what about mistakes or failures or challenges? And how do you see those?
I certainly deal with, I guess, imposter syndrome. That's too easy. I guess usually high achievers feel that, or at least that's what I've been led to understand. I mean, definitely kind of jumping from place to place too soon, that can be a mistake. Not even necessarily in work, but you know, I had a great apartment when I was younger. Actually, it was after Student Works, and I lived there for a few years, and I thought to myself, I should probably change. I've been here 3 years, I should go to another apartment. But no, you don't have to necessarily change. Sometimes what's right in front of you is best. Because I ended up, well, I did the calculation, if I had stayed there, I would have saved like thousands or tens of thousands of dollars on what I ended up spending on increased rent at every place. So sometimes trying to make the best of what's right in front of you can be a challenge. It's always a trade-off, and it goes in both ways. And I know you're asking about challenges, but also it's also been a strength of saying, you know what, it's not a good fit anymore. Time to move on. And I've gotten that right, and I've gotten it wrong. So yeah, that's something that I've thought about.
No, and I think that's very fair, by the way, is that you know, really what that says, John, is you have a inclination for action. That's what successful people have. And sometimes we need to say, hey, we're good. Let's hold, you know, and so it's both, right? It's like we can be chasing, we talk about chasing fishing lures. I know for a lot of my career up until I was around You know, mid-40s, I was chasing lots of things besides student works, which was really working, that actually damaged my business, damaged, you know, my financial statements. And then finally we went and said, or I went and finally decided, nothing else. This is it forever. And our business has gone 6 times. And, you know, it's just like that focus has made all the difference. So what did you need to change about yourself to become a value creator?
I mean, I think that not so much change, but kind of double down on accepting the process as being like the good stuff. The journey is what's fun, even though at times it can be overwhelming and difficult. And so, like, man, I got some long days sometimes doing things, and you kind of got to wonder sometimes if what's it all for, you know. I would rather be out in nature. I would rather be out, whatever, playing sports or hanging out with friends. But, you know, like there's a certain, at some point you need to sit down and work. And so being aware of that, that some, the things that you really want are on the other side of hard work. It sounds so cheesy, but it's really, there's really no shortcuts. So I think what I had to realize was I need to put in the work. I need to be authentic. And I got to bring value to the conversation. And so, for example, I might be rambling now. I don't even know if we're still talking on the same question.
Like,
but
yeah, like I love what you had to say about there really is nothing else, but hard work is a huge part of it. Just going through it to be a value creator. And it's really, really hard to do what you're doing, right? You know, software as a service, that's really tough stuff to sell. Very complex, very challenging, you know, very competitive. You know, and it really is a lot of times putting your head down, doing the work. You know, a lot of people don't want to do the work. You know, it's hard to do the work.
Yeah, totally. And again, recognizing where you have value versus where the people you're working with maybe have less. So, for example, I work with super technical people. Well, you know, they don't necessarily have the kind of social skills, but they don't have the sales skills. And so sometimes I find myself having to, you know, work with my partner to explain to him why our role is important and that it's not just about the, you know, cost of X and the cost of Y for the customer. It's not only about price. There are other elements. And some people think to themselves, well, what could those elements be? I mean, if I were in the customer's shoes, all I would care about is price. And I have to say, well, you're not in the customer's shoes, number one. And you're also wrong. There are more things to that. I mean, there's what we bring to the table and there's the perspective that we can add and we can, you know, we can structure deals in ways that are advantageous to the customer, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I mean, finding the value, it's kind of finding the value that you can bring to the conversation is super important, obviously, but I think being authentic and working hard will lead you there.
Awesome. And so what about, what key habits would someone want to steal from you, Jonathan?
Well, in sales, we're judged on the dollar amount that we bring in at the end of the quarter or the end of the year. So I think I'm pretty good at prioritizing revenue generating activities versus distractions. It is difficult because there are a lot, you know, in our world of instant messages and Slack and WhatsApp and text and emails, whatever. But I'm pretty good at identifying what are the things that are really going to move the needle and focus on those. I think that's an important skill. At the end of the day, if you're judged on your number, that's the only metric that you should be chasing. So you got to be, I think I'm good at doing things that are, and then I've had success in sales. So maybe that's part of it. I think also, you know, trying to identify asymmetric bets and focusing on those. And I can give an example. During COVID, I was pretty obsessed with stock picking. And I thought for sure, if I just studied the markets enough, and if I studied companies, and if I looked at investment techniques, I'd be able to basically be a good investor. And the data does not support this, right? You don't know what, there are black swan events that happen all the time. You don't know what's going to happen. the best stock pickers 1 year are different the next year. So I recognized if I want to make more money, it's not going to be in picking stocks. It's going to be in becoming better where I have an advantage, which is in selling cybersecurity equipment. So I'm much better off focusing my energy there and making commissions, since we have uncapped commissions in sales, and then investing that in the stock market and the S&P 500 index, for example. And so, yeah, just determining, like, I don't spend any time anymore on looking at the stock market and thinking where I can have an edge, because I don't have an edge. So I want to focus on the things that I do have an edge, which is what I can control.
No, we think the same, and we actually coach that. By the way, now we have actually a 5-hour training on what to do with the money you're making and how to think about money long term, etc. Just again to try to make an impact on our young leaders to sort of see. And again, obviously, there's some people who may go into really trying to create an edge for themselves, and you know, that's possible, but that is a full-time sleep. You know, we actually have a bunch of incredible hedge fund traders, former alumni, and people have done incredibly well in that space, but they live it, they sleep it, they, you know, they're that's just what they're about, and that's how they get really great at it, right? So
for sure, it's not impossible.
Yes, exactly. But so anything you'd like to share with the young leaders on this podcast that we haven't covered before I jump to my final question?
I mean, I think I tried to give a few nuggets of the things that I've learned. You know, picking something that you see in the future as growing and trying to stick with that if you can. Trying to give yourself an edge. And sometimes that means sticking outside the box, you know, even for a corporate sales role. I chose to invest in restaurants in part because I thought it would just differentiate me in some meaningful way. I mean, it's a very competitive landscape to get great jobs. And so you never know what's going to give you that edge. And just continuing to work on yourself and your craft and challenge yourself and surround yourself with amazing people. Like now at Palo Alto, I feel the most challenged that I've been since basically university, when I was in seminars and writing 15-page essays or whatever it is. And I realize that I really love that. I need to be challenged in order to feel that I'm pushing myself. And so I think that's a good kind of North Star that I use, that I would encourage other leaders to do themselves, is don't be afraid to challenge yourself and to think outside the box.
Absolutely. No, I think that is a great, great focus. And final question, Jonathan, when you think of the leader of tomorrow, what do you think of?
In what way?
And anyway, it's your question.
What do I think of for the leaders of tomorrow? I think that, you know, I can answer this question in a million ways, and not to be too cheesy or anything, but I think that staying authentic is really important, because you just build such meaningful relationships with people. And those are the relationships that will sustain you, I think. And what I mean by being authentic is, it happens all the time that I'm cracking jokes in serious business meetings, because I don't know, there's a funny situation, or I just think that it kind of lightens the mood, and that's okay, because that's who I am. I think when you combine, you don't have to, I would never want to fit into like the corporate mold necessarily that is sometimes imposed on you by your company or society or whatever pressures you're facing. So for me, being authentic and a straight shooter for my customers has gone a long way, and I think people appreciate that, and that's an important thing.
Yeah, I love that. No, that's great. Hey leaders, I hope you enjoyed this episode. By now, you are aware that we work with ambitious students every single year to not only help them run their first successful business, but to further their development as a leader and give them an unfair advantage in the future over their counterparts. It's why starting now, and only for the next few weeks, we'll be on campuses across Ontario
Quebec, and the East Coast, interviewing students who think they have what it takes to start their first business and get started down their path of entrepreneurship. If you think you have what it takes or know someone who might be interested, visit leaderspodcast.ca/apply and start your application process today. Once again, it's leaderspodcast.ca/apply, and I can't wait to see you on the other side.